You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Figgy, let's hit him big time.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
Y'all have great pulse of the city, and I really love listening to your show.
With John Lopez and Landry Locker, you're in the loop on Houston's Sports Leader.
I love Houston. I love the stadium. I love the fans. I just love the atmosphere.
Sports Radio 610.
Opening day is here. The Whoopie is back. The Houston Astros will be on the field in about 11 hours' time. All is well, kind of. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. After kind of filling it out, it feels like Deshaun Watson's defense is now on the attack. Rusty Harden responding to Tony Busby's calling out of the Houston Police Department.
Again.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately getting aggressive. We'll go to that in 14 minutes. But before we do, it is opening day, and it is very nice to have a team that still has a lot of question marks, but also has something that I think the other two major sports teams lack, and that is expectations. It is rebuild season for the Rockets. It is rebuild season for the Texans, but the Houston Astros have the same expectations they always have. Here's Lance McCullers of the Houston Astros talking about what the expectations are for the Astros heading into opening day.
We want to win a World Series. The goal doesn't change. I think we have the team to do it. A lot of guys are going to continue to have to step up for us. Count on our big boys, Carlos, Bregman, Altuve. We're expecting these guys to have great seasons this year. A little three-way MVP race on our own team between those three. Then, you know, we're looking for the guys to step up that did such a good job last year in the bullpen to have another huge year for us. So we're expecting to be back there and then expecting to compete for World Series.
I don't know how far this Astros team can go. It stinks that you got Justin Verlander in the final year of his deal on the IR. I don't know what to expect from Zach Greinke, but I do know that this is going to be one of the best lineups in baseball. I do know that there is some upside with this rotation, and I do know that even in the worst case scenario, this is going to be a team that is very, very nice to watch every single night. Maybe even more so this year than in past years where they may have had a better team. The fact that opening day is here, the fact that there will be some fans in the stands, the fact that this feels somewhat normal after last year's COVID year, it makes it all the more sweet. No, by the way, it's the best team in town and has been for quite a long time now.
That's what I was feeling this morning. You know, you're seeing all the corny posts about, hey, best day in sports, best opening day in sports, et cetera. I was thinking more about that feeling you get when you got a squad, you know, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, you know your squad is going to be legit. You know your squad is going to be good. We've experienced a lot with the Astros, and it just gives you that confidence to want to tune in every day, every night. It gives you that feeling of no game is out, you know, is lost until the very last out. What the Astros are giving Houston sports fans starting today, I feel, is, as you just pointed out, completely unique to them. And they own the sportscape in terms of wins and losses. They're not the biggest story. We know that with everything going on with Deshaun, et cetera. But they own the sportscape in terms of competition on the field. And that's just a good feeling to have your city, your team in that position.
It's crazy. And I mean, if there was ever a team that would be able to, you know, to have a transition, it would be the Astros, but that's not the case. This is the best team in town. This is the most likable team in town. I was talking to someone who's covered the squad for a long time last week, and I said, who's the biggest pain in the ass that you've had to cover the last 6 years? He couldn't even name one. He couldn't even put anyone in the conversation.
And that's rare.
That's beyond rare.
Yeah.
Beyond rare. And it's just a likable team. It's a good team. It's one of the best teams. And one of the staples of this team could be approaching his final season as a Houston Astro. The clock is ticking for a Carlos Correa extension. If you believe what Carlos has said, the Astros have about 11 hours, although I doubt he's going to show up to the ballpark and negotiate.
No.
Got about 11 hours to either agree to an extension with Carlos Correa or let Carlos Correa play out the year in the final year of his contract. There's a lot of takes. There's a lot of opinions on how this should be handled. 713-572-4610. But I think the handling of Carlos Correa by Jim Crane and company is perfect. I just don't see what the hurry is to sign Carlos Correa. And if you lose him, you lose him. But, A, I don't think what Carlos Correa wants is something that makes 100% sense baseball-wise, because I'm assuming it's in the 10-year, $300-plus million that Francisco Lindor got yesterday. And I also know that Jim Crane is willing to write the check. So it just doesn't seem to make sense. I don't see why you don't let Carlos Correa play this out.
And I disagree. We've had this disagreement, you and I, for a while now. I go back to market. You go back to baseball. I think they have to intersect at some point, because your points on Carlos Correa are not unfair. I'm not saying that, you know, but, you know, he has, what is it? How many missed games has he missed every year? 40, 50, something like that. He's on average. That's fair. That's absolutely fair. But we also know what we see when he does play, and he's played a lot.
Has he?
Yeah. I mean, 100-plus games on the average, that's a lot. But he hadn't played the full season.
I mean, he misses 50 games, over 50 games a year in his four full seasons. In his four 162 game season, he has missed over 50 games. That's almost a third of the season. So I get what the market is, but a lot of times when you allow the market to dictate how much you pay someone in baseball, you end up with bad contracts. You end up with the Angels. I just don't see any shame in making Carlos Correa play it out. Furthermore, I think the perception of Carlos Correa, I think he's been somewhat lucky in how he's perceived here. And I'm not saying Carlos Correa isn't a very good player. I'm not saying Carlos Correa can't go out there and perform at an MVP level. I'm saying Carlos Correa is not consistently in the lineup. He misses 40 games on average, 50 in the only four full seasons he's had. But I think Carlos Correa is lucky in that this team is so effing good, and this team has been so effing good for a long time that you have such a good foundation and so many good players around him that this guy can miss a third of the season or a quarter of the or a fourth of the season, and you don't really notice it because this team isn't as dependent on him. If this team weren't as good as it was, I think the fact that Carlos Correa misses as many games as he does would negatively impact the perception that you have of Carlos Correa. So I think he's almost benefited from that. And as times go on, and as this team gets older, and you commit 10 years to a guy like a Carlos Correa, it is going to matter, and you are going to be more dependent on him than you are right now. And the question is, can he stay healthy? Because some guys just cannot. Some guys miss 40 games a year. Some guys miss 50 games a year. And when you have Alex Bregman, when you have Jose Altuve, when you have George Springer, when you have all the talent around you that you have, they can carry you throughout the season. But as time goes on, he's going to need to prove, and this, what better year to do it than right now? He's going to need to prove that he can be in the lineup not just three out of four times a year. He's got to be in the lineup more often. Francisco Lindor misses three games a year.
Yeah.
So this talk about Francisco Lindor and Carlos Correa, Francisco Lindor is a better player right now. And I mean, the numbers are there. He's won Silver Sluggers. Carlos Correa has been to one All-Star game. Francisco Lindor is just a better player than Carlos Correa. That's not to say he might not go get paid, but baseball players get overpaid all the time on the market. And that's not a reason to assume that you made the wrong decision in letting him go.
And I just completely disagree. Your point is strong, and I get it. Rookie of the Year, All-Star, World Series champion, they rely on him as much as he relies on them. And the reason that the Astros have been so overwhelming is because they are so deep. So do you hold that against Carlos Correa? I see what your point is, but I don't hold it against him because I know what he is when he's at his best and that he plays.
You don't hold it against him that he's not in the lineup?
No. I mean, if you're injured, you're injured. But what
you don't think that should come into account when you're talking about paying somebody?
I get your point is what I'm saying. I understand your point, but I don't think that should necessarily always come into account when you know the player he is. You don't doubt the player that Carlos Correa is, do you?
No, he's a good player, but
he's good.
He's only as good as he is when he's in the lineup. He's good. He's a good player.
He's probably the best or second best shortstop in baseball
when he's in the lineup.
Okay. Well, that's not good. That's great.
That matters.
Again, I didn't say it didn't matter, Landry. I said I get your point. What I'm saying is he's the best, by all accounts, the best or second best shortstop in baseball. Would you agree with that?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if he's the best or second. I know he's not the best. I think Francisco Lindor is the best.
Okay, so that's my point. You know where he stands, and if you want to give it to Lindor, that's fine and that's fair. All I'm saying is, I don't like the way the Astros played this because he's a year younger than Lindor. He's in the same conversation as Lindor. You offered him $20 million a year, which compared to what Lindor just signed is an insult. You maybe could have had him for $22 or $23 million a year, and now you're going to have to pay $300 million. And the point on that is this. Yes, Jim Crane doesn't mind writing big checks, but I don't care who you are. You don't want to add $100 million to the bill, and that's what's going to happen.
He'll do it, though. I mean, Jim Crane is.
I'm saying, he doesn't want to add $100 million when he didn't have to.
But if Carlos Correa goes out there and misses 45, 50 more games, shouldn't you be hesitant to write him that check? Now, if he goes out there and proves that, you know, for the first time in a while, and I think it's been 4 years or whatever, he plays the majority of the games. I think that would be, you would be more willing to write the check. And I don't know what Carlos Correa's price is right now, but don't you think that it would benefit all parties involved for him to go out there and show that? Because I'm sure other teams are going to. There's going to be a team. The Angels are about to lose the Pujols contract. Who knows what happens there? Someone's going to be willing to pay Carlos Correa. But a lot of times when you overpay guys, you regret it, especially with these 10-year guaranteed deals. There's not a salary cap, but there is like an operating budget for Crane. And you do have Alex Bregman, who you can move over to shortstop.
Right. There's an operating budget, and you're going to add another $100 million to it. Look, this is just difference of opinion. You're not right. I'm not right. What I do think, though, is that when you start playing the odds and a 26-year-old shortstop at that level, which are so hard to find in MLB, I think they misplayed it. I just do.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app. Yes, Audacy. New and improved app, formerly known as the Radio.com app. It is now Odyssey, Audacy. Coming up, Deshaun Watson and his defense team were playing it somewhat conservative early on, but it appears that they are now on the attack. We'll hear what Rusty Harden, Deshaun Watson's attorney, had to say next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, we have a counter from Rusty Harden, Deshaun Watson's attorney, from Tony Busby's claim yesterday that he does not trust the Houston Police Department. He says he doesn't say that, but he basically did say that. He said that they're going to take their evidence elsewhere because Rusty Harden's son is an exclusive command staff member of HPD. Tony Busby also has a brother-in-law in there, but he said he does not trust HPD, in large part because he called out Art Acevedo to resign when he was running for mayor, he being Tony Busby. And he just doesn't trust him. Here's Rusty Harden's statement and response to Mr. Busby. Since March 19th, Mr. Tony Busby has repeatedly promised to submit evidence to the Houston Police Department in support of his anonymous client's complaints against Deshaun Watson. So far, he has not done so. Now, in response to media inquiries, Mr. Busby has abandoned his promise altogether and, in his words, will go, quote, elsewhere to provide his evidence to investigative authorities. His latest excuse for failing to go to law enforcement is also his lamest. Anyone who has dealt with HPD, as I have for many years, would know that Mr. Busby's suggestion that the department would overlook legitimate complaints based upon a family connection of one of its officers is ludicrous. It is also insulting to the dedicated professionals at HPD and to common sense. Mr. Busby's claimed fear of HPD's is partially inconsistent with his praise for the department's response to the burglary of his home during a recent campaign. I would respectfully suggest that Mr. Busby's failure to go to law enforcement does not result from some baseless fear that HPD will not fairly investigate. Instead, it is from the knowledge that his parade of anonymous allegations could not survive the rigorous inquiry of trained investigators or the need to attest to the truth of the allegations under oath. For our part, we will continue to learn about the cases in any way that we can. We and Deshaun will always remain available to any law enforcement or regulatory agency who desires our cooperation. Apparently, Mr. Busby is unwilling to do the same.
All right, here we go. The next volley. I mentioned it yesterday. Back and forth, back and forth. I was talking to Sean Pendergast before the show. They're just going like totally WWE right now. They're doing their SmackDown. They're talking noise back and forth. Who knows what to believe, what side? And Sean said accurately, this is like turning into a Hell in a Cell. Undertaker versus Mick Foley, or The Rock versus Stone Cold, the young upstarts that do all kinds of crazy stuff versus the tried and true stars. On his statement itself, it's a variation of the same theme for Tony Busby, for Rusty Harden. Casting those doubts publicly. This is absolutely a public trial right now. At least in terms of opinion, talking about it, the partiality is inconsistent with his praise for the department's response. Talking about anonymous allegations again, anonymous, he mentioned, I think, two or three times in this statement, getting that out there. I mean, this is just a war of words. This is absolutely a war of words. I'm wondering what's next from Tony Busby, because they can't just let it sit. Neither side can just let it sit.
I mean, he needs to, at some point, and I don't know, he's been playing the court of public opinion, Tony Busby has.
Well, they both have.
Busby's been playing it more, though, I would say. I would say Rusty's been countering. I would say Busby has been the aggressor.
Yeah.
I don't understand what, I feel like when it comes to the public opinion, I think initially it was, wow, look at Deshaun Watson, look at what's going on. But it does seem like when it comes to public opinion, which is really irrelevant when it comes to the legal process, unless you are trying to settle and you are trying to embarrass someone, it appears Busby is trying to embarrass Deshaun Watson, whether he's right or wrong. And I think that kind of increases the pressure. It does seem like the public is, but there are a lot more eye rolls at this point when it comes to what Tony Busby says, specifically yesterday or the night before yesterday with his claims of HPD than they were initially. So I don't know what the next play is, but it does seem like public opinion, which is where this thing has been played out in large part by Tony Busby and by Rusty Harden, there seems to be at least a little bit of a momentum shift that can change at any time, but it does seem like there are a lot more eye rolls when it comes to Tony Busby's antics.
See, I think, first of all, for every volley that Busby has hit, Rusty has countered with a similar one. So, yes, Busby has been the aggressor, as you said it, but it's not like Rusty's sitting it out and just saying we're going to state our case in court, which is what a lot of attorneys do. So it is a back and forth. I mean, they're both in this war of words, very publicly, very nasty. They're both in it together. And as far as court of public opinion, and I think most people are rolling their eyes at Busby, not necessarily thinking that these allegations are not true.
Yes, like the mayor campaign has come up multiple times. I don't know how many people really care about that. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of people observing, maybe not locally, didn't even know that he ran for mayor, but it's been brought up three times. The notion that NFL fans don't care about who their president or mayor is, I don't even know if a lot of people know what he's talking about there. So yeah, they're rolling their eyes at Busby. They're not rolling their eyes at...
I think most people still are kind of... I mean, this is just my guess from people I've been around and listening to our listeners. I think still most people are still very much like, man, Deshaun. You know, they haven't changed their opinion too much on the merits of this or the alleged merits of this. They're just like, come on, Tony.
Yeah. And here was Tony Busby at his original press conference talking about reaching out to the Houston Police Department.
I've informally been contacted by the Houston Police Department. It is our intention for the clients that are willing to do so to put together a package and to submit it to the Houston Police Department of the information that we have.
Yeah, I mean, this is what he does. I think it's still a possibility that he could submit something to another source. You and I have both been reaching out to lawyer friends and talking about, you know, other avenues that he could go, maybe the county, maybe others. But I don't think it's ever even going to come close to this. I think it's just going to be settled. I think one thing that is happening is it appears we're leaning more toward a settlement.
That seems like the right play for Deshaun Watson. That seems like something that I would probably do if I were him, for many reasons, the least of which is 4 weeks away from the draft, and he's been wanting to get traded for a while. I think a settlement would increase the likelihood of him getting his initial wish when the offseason did begin. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. The uncertain futures of Deshaun Watson and Carlos Correa. What is the right way to handle each of these situations? We'll discuss next.
We're making the stories from outside the loop matter to you. This is Localize It, presented by Westside Lexus. You're in the loop on Houston's Sports Leader. Sports Radio 610.
All right, we got two players in their mid-20s around here and two uncertain futures for very different reasons. Deshaun Watson, the standoff, the legal battle between Rusty Harden and Tony Busby. By the way, Rusty Harden has released a statement. You can see that at sportsradio610.com. The future of Deshaun Watson. What's it going to look like on the field? How should they handle it? And what's going to happen? We'll get into that, but before we do, let's hear from Nick Caserio, general manager of the Houston Texans, with Albert Breer, talking about the future of number four.
Do you still view Deshaun Watson as the starting quarterback of the Houston Texans and plan for him to be the starting quarterback of the Texans in week one?
Yeah, a couple of things. Like you said, I think the legal process is kind of a separate entity. That's a pretty active situation. So, you know, we'll leave that to, you know, to the authorities from that perspective. I mean, we're kind of day to day with everything, with everybody. From the beginning, since I've taken the job to now, we've had a lot of change and there's been a lot of activity. I would suspect, you know, as we work towards the start of training camp and into the regular season, that will continually have some adjustments and changes to the roster. What those look like, what that entails, not really sure. So at this point, we're just day to day. We're just kind of going through it one day at a time and trying to get ready for the next phase of potentially what we think is the offseason. So that's kind of what I would say just as it pertains to that situation.
Okay, you have said that Deshaun is your quarterback and you plan for Deshaun to be your quarterback. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I think we'll take it one day at a time. You know, I think everything is pretty fluid here. And we'll adjust as we go. And ultimately, okay, I think we'll do what we feel is best for the Houston Texans organizationally.
Okay. So you'd be open to a trade?
I think ultimately we'll do what we feel is best for the organization.
Okay. Have you talked to him?
Yeah, I don't want to get into any comment about what conversations have taken place with players. I think I've talked to a lot of different players. You know, those conversations are private. You know, those conversations are to remain between the respective parties. And I think that's out of respect to everybody involved.
All right. So the future of Deshaun Watson, I think there's a lot of angles here. First of all, what's going to happen? How are they going to handle it? That we'll put that to the back, because you have an interesting question that came up that I've actually wondered myself. What exactly is, assuming that he gets back in the NFL and assuming that he plays again? I think we've all made that assumption. Until we see criminal complaints, I think that assumption is fair. What exactly are we going to see from Deshaun Watson on the field, whether it's with the Texans, whether it's with the Miami Dolphins, whether it's with the Carolina Panthers? What are we going to see? Because before this year or this offseason, we assumed Deshaun Watson's going to be a franchise quarterback. Whoever gets him is going to be fortunate. It's going to be a generational talent. You've heard all that type of stuff. But could all this stuff that's gone on impact the on-field product and the on-field performance of Deshaun Watson?
It is a true nobody's talking about, because before this, Deshaun Watson was cool, professional. Even as a high school, he was just looked like a pro. You know, cool, professional.
Swag.
Slime season.
That. Swag. Just about perfect in every way, right? I mean, nobody could have asked for a better player. He wouldn't be the first player to have huge mental, emotional issues on the field, or even, you know, kind of recapturing what he was on the field because of a controversy or the yips or whatever it may be. That's going on between his ears. Look, we have experience in this city twice with a quarterback that became shell-shocked. Maybe that's the best word. All right. David Carr was almost literally shell-shocked, the first quarterback in this franchise's history, because he got sacked 60, 70, 80 times, and he was seeing ghosts out there, man. He was never the same player again. You don't even have to go outside the city limits to see what a mental issue can do to a player and their talent. Matt Schaub, we remember him as pick six Matt Schaub, unable to get it done Matt Schaub. He was really good, man. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl MVP, for whatever that's worth. But, you know, took this team to still the best season it's ever had. Matt Schaub was really good, and then he started throwing pick sixes. What happened after that? He was fried mentally. Absolutely fried mentally. I don't think that's going to be the case with Deshaun Watson, but I don't know.
Well, I think that there's a couple things. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. Shout out to everyone on the Odyssey app, the former radio.com app, new and improved version, AUDACY Odyssey. I think there's a couple things that are going to change for Deshaun Watson. First of all, I think he's going to lose the, not necessarily benefit of the doubts, but the way in which fans, media types look at him. Because you can say what you want, and I think he has been a victim of the incompetence of the Texans organization the last 2 years. But I think because of that, no matter what happened, Deshaun Watson was always looked at favorably. And there was nothing in the back of your mind that led you to even question anything about Deshaun Watson on or off the field. So when they would lose, when they would go 4-12, it was poor Deshaun Watson. Or if Deshaun Watson would even have a bad game, it would be, damn, poor Deshaun Watson. There's nothing around him. And I'm not saying that wasn't true, but from the public perception, in an ass-backwards way, you're negatively impacted on the field. But off the field, you're looked at as a guy that's just fighting a losing battle, like Andrew Luck early in his career. So from a fan perspective, I think that's going to change with Deshaun Watson, just because no matter what happens, there is that stain and there is that PR hit. And there is also some recklessness, regardless of what did or didn't happen, from Deshaun Watson. From a player performance standpoint, though, I just can't imagine that Deshaun Watson is ever going to feel the same when he plays football.
I
know you can say escape. I know you can say that, you know, this is where guys, you know, do their thing. But
it can be.
But
it can also be the exact opposite.
In this era, man, where you have social media, and these guys are so into social media, including Deshaun Watson, and it's been like 95% positive up till the last few weeks. Even when he was demanding a trade with the Texans, there was a huge movement supporting Deshaun Watson. They protested outside the effing stadium for Deshaun Watson. Now, I don't know how that impacts you mentally, but I just don't know how you can go into an opposing stadium. I don't know how often Deshaun Watson's even been booed on the road.
We talked about that. I don't know if he's ever been booed. I mean, other than, hey, you suck, even though he just lit you up for four touchdowns.
In college, but in the pros, I don't know how often Deshaun Watson's gotten booed.
Probably not.
This is going to be a different experience for Deshaun Watson. Maybe this causes him, and Wade Smith said, maybe this causes him to put the phone down. Maybe this causes him to focus even more. Maybe this causes him to change his ways and tighten stuff up and quit making the past mistakes he was making in the past, whether it's trusting the wrong people, so on and so forth. But it's hard for me to imagine that when Deshaun Watson goes through the tunnel, when Deshaun Watson goes on the football field, with everything that's gone on right now, it's hard for me to imagine that this guy mentally is going to be the same. The great ones can overcome it mentally.
Yes.
But it's hard for me to imagine it's going to be an adjustment for Deshaun Watson, I think.
This is one of the biggest controversies in NFL history, if you really think about it. How long it's lasting, the breadth of the allegations, the shock of about whom it is. I mentioned earlier, you don't even have to go outside these city limits, but let's go outside these city limits. Players have had incredible career paths, and then something shocking happens, something controversial happens in their life, and then they get fried between the ears. I don't know what kind of player Manti Te'o would have been. He's a good player, but he was a Heisman finalist, man. I mean, and then the catfishing happened, and that's just the one that popped into my head. There's probably better ones that you can think of.
God, what a weird one.
Chuck Knobloch, another Houstonian, a shout out to Bel Air. I mean, perennial all-star Yankee. Then he can't throw the ball. And I don't know what it was necessarily that prompted that. But when something happens and you get fried between the ears, are you ever, you know, some players flourish. You know, they put up the walls. They got the I told you so chip on their shoulder. And they flourish. Some go the exact opposite way, and frankly, I would lean toward Deshaun flourishing, but we've got too many pieces of evidence of players that just shrivel.
1215 on the text line. Shout out to the Loopholes. If you listen, you are one. Bringing up Kobe Bryant. We've brought this up many times. We actually heard from Kobe Bryant. The difference between Kobe and Deshaun, I would say, is that there wasn't social media back then. And we're talking about criminal charges as well with Kobe. Kobe was going to court and then going straight to the court and dropping 40. So it was a little bit different. Tiger Woods is coming up. Tiger was 34 when it happened, and he also had injuries. He slumped, but don't you think injuries kind of impacted it too?
Yes, but he went from, did he have 15 majors? Whatever the number was. It was close to Jack Nicklaus.
To one in the last.
And then all of a sudden, long. 8 or 9 years. That's another great example. And Tiger was about as strong-willed as you ever. Now, look, let's be fair. Injuries came in back and knee, et cetera. But nevertheless, you would have thought he would have scratched one major out.
And I think a lot of it's reputation, too. I mean, his reputation, Tiger was looked at as flawless. Deshaun was obviously on a lower level. We're talking about a really, really good NFL quarterback, probably one of the best in the game, to one of the best athletes of all time in Tiger Woods. But I mean, from a perception standpoint, when you talked about Tiger Woods pre waitresses and, you know, escorts and all that type of stuff, I think it's a little bit different to it's a little bit similar to Deshaun Watson. So who knows what happens? It'll be interesting. And I think that's just another angle.
Texter said Rick Ankiel.
Yeah, Rick Ankiel just could not throw strikes. Don't know what happened with that.
But again, we don't know exactly what did it there, but much like Chuck Knobloch, once it got in between his ears, it was over.
Yeah, I just feel like some of those had to do with on the field, though. I wonder, like, as far as
what I'm saying is the result is it's still weighing on your brain.
Yeah, and I wonder what Deshaun is thinking right now. I know this. I don't know how you can sleep as good at night if you're Deshaun Watson as you did before. I just don't see how that can happen.
No way. I mean, no way.
It just doesn't.
I mean, just put yourself.
He's a human being.
Put yourself in just a fraction of the heat that he's getting and the embarrassment.
Can't do that. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fee. I can't even imagine what it's like for him right now. Another local athlete, another uncertain future. Carlos Correa. Astros play in 10 hours. Can't believe I'm saying that. They will take the field. As soon as Jose Altuve walks to the plates, that will be the end of contract negotiations between Carlos Correa and the Houston Astros. That's what he said. If you don't believe me, here's Carlos Correa himself talking about that.
I'm preparing like I'm going to be a free agent this year. You know, once the season starts, I'm playing my last season before I become a free agent. I'm eligible for free agency. So for me, it doesn't make any sense to be dealing while I'm trying to focus and try to perform and trying to help my team win ball game. You know, I've given 5-6 years of my career to this organization. Rookie of the Year, All-Star Game, World Series champions, multiple great playoff performances. If they don't see me here long term, then another team will. So yeah, it's never hard feelings. It's the business, how it works.
Now the uncertain future of Carlos Correa. We know that Carlos Correa has a lot of talent. We also know that he's out of the lineup quite often. 50 plus games in his 4 full seasons, about an average of 40 times he misses games each season. Francisco Lindor just got a fat contract. Carlos Correa apparently did not like the initial offer that the Astros offered him. So we have uncertain future with Deshaun Watson. We have uncertain future with Carlos Correa unless the Astros are able to reach a deal within the next few hours.
You know, I listened to Carlos Correa, and he says no hard feelings, but it sure sounds like there's some hard feelings in his tone and his words. I mean, he's like, I consider myself free agent. I've done all this, and they're not doing it. But I keep going back to Michael Brantley. He was gone. He was gone.
Checkbook came out quick.
To Toronto. And then Jim Crane, he's got that pride, man. He's got that competitiveness that you can't oversell. Is it possible he's going to say, screw it, 300, here you go?
Maybe. Jim Crane will write checks. If Carlos Correa has 60 home runs this year and plays every game.
No, I'm saying today. Like he did with Brantley.
He's not cheap. Like, he's going to.
Because his ego got hurt.
He's going to do it. He's going to do
what if he just, like, Correa shows up at the park with a big old smile on his face and Jim Crane just said, screw it.
I just don't know. I would make Lois ride it out. I know that we disagree on this. I think they're playing this the right way. Quite honestly, I don't know that Carlos Correa wants to sign a contract right now. If he truly believes in himself, then why would he not want to hit the market?
Especially after yesterday.
After fans in the stands in a full baseball season, if you're Carlos Correa, why the hell do you not want to hit this market? I mean, if you truly believe in yourself. I got to think that Carlos Correa's asking price has to be way too high for what Jim Crane wants to pay right now. I don't think there's any middle ground here. I think Carlos Correa knows that even if he gets hurt again, he might get that money. And from the Astros' perspective, you commit 10 years to a guy and you're going to have to rely on him more. It's the typical battle between front office and player to where I can at least see both sides. I don't think I have to take a certain side, but I can at least see both sides. But the Astros are the team that I am committed to in this situation. So I just think with that in mind, if I'm James Click, write it out. I also think a contract year Carlos Correa could be very beneficial because I think he plays better pissed off than when he's not as angry as maybe he's been in previous years. I think last year in the playoffs was a prime example of that.
No, that's absolutely true. I'm wondering, you know, it's not really necessarily about, you know, how many games he's played or et cetera. I know you're talking about that, but from my perspective, it's about leverage and market. You know, right now he's got the market on his side.
Oh, the market
Carlos
is
Correa.
The market ain't going anywhere in
the
baseball.
The leverage would benefit both sides.
They print money.
If he has a monster year, that helps the Astros in the short term and probably will make Correa about $320 million.
It's the ultimate game of chess.
Speaking of the millions of dollars.
Reward. We'll get to that in just a sec. Little college college hoops for you. Reminder, 2 days from now on Saturday, U of H is going to be looking to advance against that team from Waco, the U of H Cougs. You can hear them right here on Sports Radio 610. Coverage starts at 3:30. Westwood One's coverage of March Madness is brought to you locally by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Shout out to Academy Sports and Outdoors. Shout out to them Cougs looking to advance. And speaking of college basketball, and speaking of teams from the state, The Texas Longhorns have a new basketball coach, Chris Beard from Texas Tech. Come on down. You are Shaka Smart's replacement.
This is embarrassing for Texas Tech on a couple of levels. Great for the University of Texas. Chris Beard is a great coach. And yes, I use the word great. Maybe I'm wrong on this. You'll know this. Didn't Texas Tech give Beard another contract already, like 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's a $4 million buyout, though.
That's where they screwed up.
It's all right. So here we go, baby!
That's where they absolutely screwed up. After he gets you to the tournament and then ultimately the Final Four, you make the buyout.
What if he wanted this job from the beginning?
Now, he might. You're right. He may have negotiated. I don't want to buy out higher than this because he had his eye on Texas. He was a student there. He was a student assistant there. It is his dream job. As the late, great Bear Bryant once said, when mama calls, you go home. And I love that line, and he's going home. So good for him, but Texas Tech, make it a $12 million buyout.
$4 million, not easy, not that hard to come up with for a lot of the boosters out there. Coming up, it is opening day. What better man to speak with than Sports Radio 610's Astros reporter Adam Spillane? How does he think the Astros should handle the Carlos Correa situation? And what is he expecting from the Stros in 2021? We'll discuss next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.